And 3 weeks into it, I realized that everything we thought we knew about prostitution was wrong. I had also learned about the pedophile underground that was used for, and all of this, how it worked into human compromise and human intelligence. It was all organized. In fact, they don't even want the public to know there is a thing like human compromise or human intelligence. And that's what I got into, at levels that are beyond belief.
Sign up for the Superhuman Brain Free Masterclass. 99% of the population is focused on treating the symptoms of brain-based diseases and disorders. Remarkably, the 1% who focus on cultivating a healthy, high-performing brain often see symptoms disappear as a side effect of getting healthy and restoring function. The Superhuman Brain Masterclass will give you access to the upgrades you've been looking for: maximized memory, exceptional focus, and greatly productive brain function. When you join this free masterclass, you'll learn the Superhuman Brain proprietary methodology, a world-class education with simple checklists, step-by-step solutions, and little-known protocols that invite healing, brain upgrades, and next-level performance. The Superhuman Brain Masterclass is online and free from December 3rd through the 9th, 2018. Sign up with the link below. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This episode, we are diving into the way Washington, D.C. and the powerful around the world, politicians and powerful business moguls, are controlled and compromised by various power brokers around the world. Many of you may have wondered why a show called Business Game Changers would have started discussing pedophilia and human trafficking. And I will tell you, as a journalist who is trying to understand the edge of change, in today's world, it would be impossible to at some point not run head on into the dark world of human trafficking, because this is how the powerful control others and how they are controlled. It is a currency of the powerful. It is rampant, and it is what is destroying our country. I had the enormous privilege of interviewing Detective James Rothstein, known in the shadow world and shadow government as Jimmy Boots. His investigations into simple prostitution led him directly into organized human trafficking, including pedophilia, ritual sacrifice, and high-level blackmail. He ultimately ended up in the middle of the highest profile cases and the most powerful power brokers in the world, including the highest levels in Washington, D.C., the Catholic Church, and the United Nations. I was able to interview him about many topics. This is the first of a series of shows that I will be airing with him. This episode, he lays out the groundwork for what he saw and why it was occurring. He also shares his understanding of Trump and the results of Trump's actions and how they're a systematic breakdown of the human trafficking of children. It is important for everyone to understand that this dark side of our system is destroying our communities and ultimately our country. Nothing but the complete dismantling of this evil practice will allow our country to become great again. Now, here's my interview with James Jimmy Boots Rothstein. Let's start with your background. How did you get started in investigations?
Well, how it got started, after I was appointed to, as a cop, I got assigned to the 16th Precinct, which was Times Square in New York. And about a year after I got appointed, we were having problems with prostitutes. And since so many of them were from Minnesota, and especially the area around here, the captain knew I was from Minnesota and this area. So the captain told me, why I'm assigning you to locking up prostitutes, you know, for loitering for prostitution.
And this activity was in New York?
Yeah, New York City, Times Square, and that's how I got into it. And 3 weeks into it, I realized that everything we thought we knew about prostitution was wrong. And then eventually, shortly thereafter, I saved the life of a girl when the pimps came to kill her because she wasn't going to work for them. And that got me into the really deep stuff. And with it, a couple months later, after I had told them to be careful that the pimps were going to kill a cop, a plainclothesman or something, they killed Anthony Campisi. A pimp killed Anthony Campisi. And that's when the police department realized they had nothing. And so at that point, I was assigned to going in and finding out what was really going on. And that's how I got into the real depth of this stuff and the different investigations. And by that time, I had also learned about the pedophile underground that was used for, and all of this, how it worked into human compromise and human intelligence. It was all organized.
And at one point, you were given free rein.
Yes, yes. I got called in one day, and I was told to report to an office, and it was on a third floor of a factory. And the funny thing is, you were told when you get off the elevator, you go through the green door in front of you, you make a left, and the first office is yours. There was a pretty good-sized room with different offices, but no names, no nothing. And I worked with a guy that had worked there, and I didn't know it till about 10 years ago. We had actually both worked in the same office and never knew each other. That's how secretive this thing was.
And why was it so secret?
Because, first of all, if the information you got and stuff put it on file, there were people who would go in and get your records and use it to extort people. See, extortion is a big thing. It's human compromise, human intelligence. In fact, they don't even want the public to know there is a thing like human compromise or human intelligence. And that's what I got into, at levels that are beyond belief.
Well, let's first talk about pedophilia and human trafficking,
because yep.
That was one of the main areas that you really got into.
Yep.
But first, what was the main difference between pedophilia and human trafficking?
There is no difference. Not when you get into the, you know, how they're used. There's pedophilia separate and independent, you know, just on the local level. But it is all done. It's controlled. It's used. They're professionally set up. It's a well-organized movement across the country at all different levels. And that's why people who try to put this under one umbrella doesn't work. You have to understand how the whole system works to be able to figure it out.
And that's what you did. They gave you free rein.
Yes.
And you traveled all over the world.
Yes, I could go anywhere in the world and the country. I had an unlimited expense account. An unlimited expense in New York is a lot of money.
Well, I was told that there was a task force that was formed, and you're the only one that's left.
Yeah, but that task force, I was the only one that was there from day one until we got stopped with the State Select Committee on Crime.
Why did they stop?
National security.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and it's documented, you know.
Did they specify what national security that you were impeding on?
Yeah, yeah, a whole bunch of it, particularly the stuff going into, because I had arrested Frank Sturgis from the Kennedy assassination, and then I had arrested another guy who was heavily involved in the pedophile world, using people to compromise people.
Politicians.
And business people and power brokers. Yes.
And they didn't want you interfering with what they could do.
Yes, yes. And they didn't know how much I knew at the time. But yes, when I took the second guy in less than 2-3 months, they didn't know what I knew, so they shut us down. And then I got retired. I was retired. I didn't retire.
How long did you end up doing that? How many years?
13 years. Yeah, the first thing started like, 14 years I did a total, but 13 years is when I was cut loose.
So you had 13 years of your unlimited budget to just figure this stuff out.
Yeah, and in between, every once in a while, they'd shut down an investigation, and I'd probably do something for a month or so, then somebody would start again. And I get brought back, and then we get shut down again. And the final one was when the governor of the state of New York appointed me to the State Select Committee on Crime to see what the effects these crimes were having on society. And I was there about 3 years, and then one day we were shut down and I was retired.
And what were the effects that you shared with people?
Oh my gosh, the whole gamut of it. You know, how this affects, you know, the kids and the people, and what the truth was, how it was used to compromise governments and the military and law enforcement, and every facet of our life is influenced by this.
It's tearing apart the fabric of society.
Fragment, and not only of that, but of the family and even the schools. When you see, you have a perfect example now, and I don't know what happened out in Barron, Wisconsin.
I suppose it ties into human trafficking, but
Barron,
probably
Wisconsin,
the pedophilia
came up,
trafficking.
That area came up in
then
our
we
investigation
can get into the other trafficking.
Ago. The same as it ties in with what was going on here.
I know it ties into human trafficking, but let's focus on pedophilia trafficking. Then we can get into the other trafficking. How serious of an issue is pedophilia in our country in Washington, D.C.? And when I say serious, we know it affects every part of the community, but how big is it and how serious?
Okay. According to my work that I did and factual things that I saw, 35% to 40% are compromised and involved. I have it from experts like Robert Merritt and people like that that have it at 80%. And that runs the gamut of everything involved in this, in the political and everything else that goes on.
And when you say involved, you mean somebody who may be running the company, and then there's somebody who might be blackmailed.
Yes, yes. And that's what it's done for, both in industry and in politics and our military. Again, I have examples, as I told you, everything I talk about, I have factual examples of what happened. They were either investigations or cases that I personally did, not that I read about. So this is what it's based on.
What are some of the big cases that you've been involved in?
Well, the biggest one actually turned out to be the Son of Sam case, which is I first found out about in 1968. I was taken by an informant to Untermeyer Park in Yonkers, New York, and showed where they were sacrificing the German shepherds and the little and the kids, you know, the victims, and also to Van Cortlandt Park and what was known as the Meadows. So that's when I already had heard about the different things, but that's when I was physically taken and introduced to it. And in the 90s, I was brought back to New York. And the biggest misnomer is the Son of Sam case. That was only a part of it. But I got brought back out there, and I actually took a sergeant, Kevin Murphy, and Maury Terry to the site and showed them with it after all those years. So, and that had direct connections to right here, where in a chapel here we found the same, in, you know, drawings, the cult and stuff that we found in the chapel or sacrifice place in Untermeyer Park. I had infiltrated that.
How many of these cases have cult or satanic underpinnings?
A lot of them, especially right now between the full moon and Halloween. This is a high time of the year for casualties. And we had followed that, you know, across the country. At first we called it the Interstate 90-94, which just covered the one end that didn't cover the one that ran through the southern part of the country. Yes, we actually had established that route. Like I say, now it's called the Smiley Face Killers. But that was another New York detective who didn't even know me, and a professor from St. Cloud State here that identified that. We had known it as the Interstate 90-94 because it went west from New York. And in 1976, when they first got wind that we were onto what was known as the Son of Sam case, is when they started moving west. There were other parts of it that have been operating because these are very well connected. You know, it's not like you think it's a business, and it is a business, but their records and modes of transferring information is unbelievable and very secret. You have to be able to infiltrate it to learn it, and I did.
When you say that 40 to 45%, and some people say up to 80% of our politicians and our powerful class are involved in this, are you saying more for the sexual purpose or also the satanic underpinnings?
It goes across the whole board. It's hard to separate them because they lap over. You know, many of them, if they're in at one point, they ended up going all the way. You know, a lot of them, for some reason, we always figured it was this. When they got to the point where they thought they were so big nobody could touch them, well, that was what they could do, you know, is use kids. And there it gets very gruesome when you describe what the actual things are that supposedly they try to gain, or what the ultimate how sexual desires or how they're satisfied. It gets very gruesome.
I've heard of the hormone adrenochrome. Is that something that they're trying to get to?
I don't believe so. I believe it's just being people who think they can act and do anything they want to do because of their power. The reason why much of this happens are, and then they try to blame the gay community. There's many pedophile heterosexuals as there are gay. You know, this is where, again, it's a misnomer. It is something that our society right now, what they believe this is about, has been so misled. It's unbelievable. We not only worked the criminal aspect, we had people from the Policy Science Corporation, some of the most brilliant scientists on this, working with us. But again, we also were able to interview and get the real story from the people involved.
So what is it about?
It's power and sex. That ever overpowering, that they can do anything they want and get away with it.
They're sick.
Yeah, they're sick, baloney. They should get their heads handed to them. But, you know, it's, again, like I said, you have to be politically correct nowadays. You can't tell the truth.
What about the Franklin scandal?
Yes, I had that. I was given that in a bar on West 57th Street, owned by an Irishman who I knew from my days. And yes, I know all about the Franklin cover-up. I know before John DeCamp ever got it, I had it already. It was tied to the Omaha, Nebraska. The whole thing, which again comes out of the Son of Sam stuff. And I had contacts in the intelligence world who had helped me with that.
When they covered it up, who was ultimately behind the Franklin scandal?
The whole Franklin scandal, John DeCamp tried to do the best he could. But John DeCamp also knew where it was leading to. Because when you had King and them all tied in with the money movement, and again, it was human intelligence, human compromise, where they used this to compromise certain people. I knew all the players in there.
Was it all the way to the White House?
Well, when you say the White House, do you mean Washington? It was all the way to Washington, yes. It was part of that national, the whole national thing that was going on. It was just part of it. It was a small part of it. The Franklin cover-up was a small part of it with the connections. And that's why Colby ended up getting killed, because Colby, and I know because of other involvements, had finally decided that he was going to help. And the next thing, he went for a canoe ride and was dead.
When you say this is just a small part of it, are you saying that there's stories like this all across the country?
Yes, there are.
And they just don't become public?
No, they don't become public because any media people who try to go with it, their careers are over. I have a list of them. People who have been here, people who I worked with, what happened to them once they tried to go public with this.
Their families are smeared and...
Yeah, and their careers are over. The list is quite long.
And I would like that list.
Yeah.
Why is the Wetterling case in Minnesota so important?
Well, because it's connected to that thing on East 64th Street when those little boys were killed. The next case after that was the Patz case in New York, because my informant, Ben Rose, was observed there. And the case that followed that was the Johnny Gosch case. Then is the Martin case. Then is the Allen case. And the last one was the Wetterling case. And there is a common name that I believe the guy is still alive, but there was something that followed this. Also, I know personally of the certain agent with 19 men who followed these cases around, and they were on the Wetterling case. I personally interviewed the guy, talked to him, knew who he was. Yes.
When you say 19 men, what were they part of?
Intelligence operation.
And when the Wetterling case went down, did they all...
They all knew. They knew how it all tied from that case that we had on East 64th Street, where they didn't want it to kick back and expose that.
And they were actively covering it up?
Oh, yeah. Well, the sheriff, the new one you had here, effectively said this was a cover-up. But there's so much more into the Wetterling case. You know, it's like, again, look at the Patz case. The guy that they got guilty on that one. The cops called me, investigators at the time, and made me promise I wouldn't give their name, because my informant, Ben Rose, had been observed, and he was hard to miss. My original information is just to show you how this works. I get called into the office of one of the top five bosses in the police department. He closes the door, turns up the music, and we're talking. He takes a piece of paper, and on it is written, "Dr. Rockefeller looks like Quasimodo supplies little boys to the United Nations." I nod, he nods, he crumples the paper up, puts it in an ashtray, and burns it. And with that, we kept talking, and when we got done, I walked out. That guy ended up being Ben Rose, and he looked like Quasimodo. That's how we know. But he was supplying those kids to the United Nations. We proved all that. The apartment where the two little boys were killed that I told you about was his apartment. That's why I know what happened. And he was also at the kidnapping site of Eaton Patz. Two detectives called me and told me, "Don't ever tell anybody my name," because he said, you know, first of all, he says, "We can't find that you ever arrested Ben Rose." Well, we didn't, because when we arrested him, we arraigned him, we took him to a hotel room and arraigned him in front of a judge. So there was no record. You know, it's called, you know, that's the way we worked, because you couldn't let anybody know you had him.
When they brought those kids to the United Nations, what were they doing? Were they using those kids for blackmail?
Oh, sure. Sure, they were using it to, you know, bribe people, blackmail them, and everything else. It was part of the operation.
Were they mostly boys, or were they also girls?
Oh, they were girls, too. But this Ben Rose operation was boys. Yeah, girls was a different group. Yeah, I was involved in that with the Profumo scandal, too. They came over on that. Because one of my informants was very knowledgeable. And why they came, this was after it happened. It was about 1968 when they came to see me, because this is, I think Profumo happened in 63 or 64. But in the follow-up, Scotland Yard and MI6 came to see me to make sure of the political connection and information that might have been moved. So they came to see me because my informant was capable of getting into there.
So when they were bringing boys to the United Nations, was Jacob Wetterling one of those boys that was brought?
No. That was part of a whole that was part of the ring. You know, how this stuff moved. And the last I have it, the actual last killing was in Minot, North Dakota, when one of the car boys was killed there. but they ended up settling in Kanab, Utah. And years ago, I had somebody that came right here and gave me all the information on that, and it was under Best Friends of Animals that it was set up in Kanab, Utah. Although people now have been looking at it, and there was somebody here who I told this to actually found the person, and they have been on it, but they got stopped.
My understanding is that Jacob Wetterling was taken right before Halloween, so more than likely those kids were abused and killed on Halloween.
No, it goes with, I don't remember, I used to know all this. What it has to do with the full moon and Halloween and all these different signs and stuff that fit into it. There's a whole, and I guess it changes when somebody dreams up a new cult thing. But yes, at one time we had all the seasons where this and how it would fit in and about the sacrifices. It's just like when I was up in Maine, the two priests brought a mother to me. And she, because they knew I was a detective in New York, so they came to ask me if this could be true, that somebody had approached his mother to sacrifice her six-month-old baby, you know, which I knew all about. And yes, it was true, and I made sure it didn't happen. But there's all this stuff. You have that going on around here forever.
And you state that Minnesota is one of the worst places, if not the worst places in the country. Why is that?
Well, there's many reasons. But one of it is everything here is politically correct. You know, you can't tell the truth. You got to go along with the system. And over the years, the time I spent here, and every time you had a cop who tried to do the right thing here, he was crucified. Lieutenant Gary McGaughey, if you look at the report I did on him, the kids that we helped and brought to New York to testify and everything, and he was destroyed, just like his partner Kenny Tidwell. You know, it's just the way it was. And we couldn't, at that time, the things that we saw and observed here was just unbelievable. And then another very sad part of this is what happens to the girls in the Native American area. Again, example, I had the girl we brought, she was a thalidomide baby, and had a flipper for an arm, which made her valuable. And she had been sold into...
Why did that make her valuable?
Because... how many people do you know with flippers for a left arm? You know, this is the way...
the cult world is.
Yeah. And when she came to testify in New York, we had 11 or 13 kids come to testify. Lieutenant Gary McGaughey brought them there. And they told us what happened here in Minnesota. And when he came back, he was crucified. He ended up just totally destroyed. His family gone and everything. The biggest scandal I've ever heard in the state of Minnesota. And 2 years ago, I was up in Little Falls and I gave a speech about this. And I mentioned Kenny Tidwell, and his uncle, I think it was his uncle, said to me, you know, Kenny just died and he lived in fear his whole life after that because he was always scared somebody was going to get him for what he had done, you know, trying to stop this stuff. Yeah,
Pedophilia operates in rings. Now, how does that work?
Oh, yeah, but it's not...
but how does it work? How does the trafficking work?
Oh, easy. They buy, sell of them. We had one guy, Willie Dunn. He actually ended up perfecting it. He got a Winnebago, and he would drive the country buying, selling, and kidnapping little boys. Now, he was a major operator, but you had that. That was going to the extreme, but they've... you know, it's like an underground. I got this kid, I'm tired of him, you want him? And the next guy takes him. They'll sell him for even this guy I told you that was out here in the Wetterling case. I had people that paid as much as $25,000 for a kid, from $2,500 to $25,000. And they sell them. It's like a market. Then we had in New York what was known as juice joints. These were places run by the mafia, where at night you could go there, there'd be 200-300 kids from 13, 14, 15 on up. They were boys and girls, but mostly boys. And you'd see the limousines come by looking to pick up the kids. Nobody knew where they came from, where they went, and whenever we tried to work on it, it got shut down because I know who is running them. But there were two, three of them at any given time in New York. I went to Minneapolis, there were things like that. So these things are set up, and that's how they move. They move them from one place to the next.
And where do they get these kids?
Oh, schools. In one instance, we had a case where 200 kids disappeared in an operation, and nobody ever knew what happened to them. That happened more than once, where whole groups of kids over periods of time from children's homes and such would disappear.
Are they mostly from children's homes, or are from everywhere?
Everywhere, schools, everything. I just had a kid here the other year, right here, and I had alerted the authorities. You know, the superintendent was very good, but after that, and the next thing, she was being trafficked in South Dakota. Why?
Now, what happens to these kids? I know you say you don't know, but do they stay in the country, or do they leave the country?
They do. We also got into the international stuff. Yes, they are used all over the world. I'll give you an example of another case. There was a young lady, and her pimp was Red Dog. And I got to know her, and again, in the work I did, my job was to find out what was happening. And I got to know the girl. She was from Rockville, Minnesota, which is right down the road here. And I told her I was from St. Martin. And, well, how do I know you're telling the truth? And she said to me, I was brought into this world by Dr. Herman Koop. And I said, so was I. She says, well, then you're from St. Martin and I'm from Rockville. That girl got killed by her pimp about 1971 or so. And I notified the authorities out here, and to this day, nobody has ever admitted that their child disappeared. And she's buried in Potter's Field, New York, New York City, in Potter's Field. I never knew her real name because in the work we did, that's not what you did, you know.
You didn't tell your real name.
No, didn't even know my real name, you know, unless I had to take action. But otherwise, I was Jimmy Boots. You know, you're in the street.
How do they cover up their activities?
You don't have to cover it up. Nobody does nothing to stop them. Why would they cover it up?
Is all this stuff out in the open? The juice bars and the rest?
Yeah, it's out in the open. You can go anywhere and watch it. God, I remember going to the mall, and I'm sitting there waiting for the kids to get done shopping. I says, look at that. What do you mean? Oh, that guy there. That's a pedophile. Well, how do you know? Well, whenever he was looking in the window, right, a young boy would come by, he'd start looking at him. I mean, people, it's here. But you got to know, you know, you got to be able to and believe what you're watching. These kids don't disappear for nothing.